This is the Cullinane and Green Report. Today, we're privileged to have as our guest, Bill McDermott.
Welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report. I'm Joe Cullinane.
And I'm Roger Green. Bill McDermott is the president and CEO of SAP Americas and Asia Pacific Japan, and a corporate officer of SAP AG, the largest business software company in the world. McDermott is responsible for managing SAP's strategic activities in the United States, Canada, and Latin America, and in the Asia-Pacific Japan region, which includes Japan, China, and India, directing more than 17,000 employees to serve the needs of customers. SAP Americas, headquartered in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, is a leader in providing collaborative business solutions to companies of all sizes in more than 25 industries. In 2006, SAP appeared for the first time on Business Week's list of most innovative companies. Additionally, SAP has been ranked number 3 in the computer software category of Fortune magazine's America's Most Admired Companies. Since McDermott's arrival at SAP, the company in the U.S. has delivered 18 consecutive quarters of significant market share gains, revenue growth, and customer satisfaction improvements. Prior to joining SAP, McDermott served as Executive Vice President of Worldwide Sales Operations at Siebel Systems and President of Gartner, Inc., where he led the company's core operations. He spent 17 years at Xerox Corporation, where he progressively rose through the ranks to become the company's youngest corporate officer and division president. McDermott is an active community leader and advocate for corporate social responsibility. He was recently named Humanitarian of the Year by Triangle, Inc., a social services organization that focuses on helping people with disabilities. In 2006, McDermott received the Yitzhak Rabin Public Services Award in recognition of his contributions as a civic leader who has demonstrated a commitment to Israel as a source of technological innovation. McDermott received an MBA degree from the J.L. Kellogg Graduate School of Management at Northwestern University, and he completed the Executive Development Program at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton Graduate School of Management. He received his B.S. degree in Business Administration from Dowling College. We are privileged to have Bill McDermott with us today on the Cullinane and Green Report.
So, Bill, welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report. Really pleased to have you here.
Thank you.
You have a strong sales background. How important is sales and business development to the success of SAP?
Very important. We made making every customer a best-run business our vision some time ago to really understand how companies are attempting to grow their business in industries, how they're attempting to grow it, whether they're small, medium, or large, requires you to really connect with that customer in a highly interdependent way. So I don't know how you do that and do it well if you don't truly have a sales bias and a desire to develop business on the front lines with your team serving that customer.
Bill, one of the trends in enterprise software today has been software as a service. And of course, Salesforce.com has been sort of a sterling example of how to do that and catch the interest of the marketplace. Do you think this trend is going to spread or could spread to ERP systems? And are companies, do you think, a little bit more reluctant with ERP kinds of data to trust and rely on external providers for such mission-critical services?
In the case of sales and having a CRM application on demand, what customers like about that is that sales, marketing, and field service folks can get some visibility into their contacts and into their pipeline and therefore have a decent handle on what's going on in their business.
Sure.
But what they don't like about it is at times they'll need to have data that touches in to their supply chain information or their financials, and very often they have an incomplete view of what's actually going on in that customer relationship in its entirety. The level of complexity and what customers are looking for will vary between small, medium, and large enterprises. There will be scenarios within the ERP category that will be disaggregated from the platform. For example, some customers might want to manage certain aspects of financials in an on-demand capacity, things that they view as context, not core. And same is true for HR, perhaps e-recruiting as an example.
Right.
But in the whole, companies that are running a business process on an end-to-end basis will require platforms such as SAP and will be less likely to choose on-demand solutions.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you about the completeness of the data on sort of an extracted view, a very narrow view of the world. And I get the feeling that in some cases, Salesforce.com was an initiative that sales departments could take without the cooperation or even knowledge of the IT guys. And clearly, that wouldn't be the case if they want to get into the real core data of the corporation. Do you think it's sort of a battlefront in that regard, in terms of Salesforce, and why that might not be the case with an SAP solution?
I think Salesforce, as an example, decided to go for a tactical play at a departmental versus an enterprise level.
Right.
And certainly for small and medium companies, that had some appeal.
You're sure.
In larger companies, it probably had some appeal as well if you were just talking to sales, field service, or marketing. But when you talk to the CEO, the CFO, or the CIO that's taking a broader vision of the entire enterprise, having business processes that are integrated at the enterprise level is very important. All customers that are on an on-demand sales application today will tell you the next big idea is how they integrate into the core systems of their company.
Right,
so
right.
A lot of times you'll find that people will start in an on-demand fashion to get going, which is perfectly plausible. But at some point, they're going to want to grow strategically. So I think the idea is begin immediately, but grow strategically. And that is where SAP really comes in.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense.
Bill, Roger and I actually come from the enterprise software industry ourselves, but how do you think the industry's changed in the last 5 years, enterprise software, and where do you see it going in the next 5 years?
If you look back 5 years ago in the world of enterprise software, it was kind of just coming off the overhang of Y2K and to some extent everybody becoming e-enabled. And at that time, the run-up was really based on best-of-breed technologies. If somebody had a best supply chain or a best customer or a best ERP system, many companies would invest that way. What they realized is things may be best, but that doesn't mean they breed. And there was a tremendous challenge with integration, and therefore some of the productivity benefits they intended to get out of these investments they did not necessarily get. So if you fast forward that to the current era, many of these companies now are realizing that standards are being set. Microsoft is a standard on the desktop. SAP, with its share, has become a standard in the enterprise. And what they're doing is they are consolidating legacy, consolidating best of breed, taking out a lot of inefficiencies and a lot of cost by repurposing their investment dollars onto a platform. Where the industry is going is once you've made your platform choice, service-oriented architectures are service-enabled. So as you pick a market leader that is a standard, you'll find many small and large companies alike will be building innovation, what I call snap-on innovation, onto these platforms. So you'll still be able to change your business model, be agile, be flexible, but it will all emanate from a core system that we refer to as the business process platform. That's where we see the future.
What would be an example of one of these snap-on applications?
For example, if you look at the SAP platform and the relationship with Microsoft, Microsoft is the desktop leader, a very admired, successful company. Many of the end users that use Microsoft today would very much like to interoperate with SAP enterprise applications right through the comfort of Microsoft Office.
Right.
That would be an example of a snap-on to the SAP platform. Adobe is a market leader in forms and forms management. Adobe Interactive Forms is a snap-on to the SAP platform. Even small, less known companies like Vendavo that focus on pricing optimization snaps on to the SAP platform. Vital Spring, which is a small company that takes healthcare costs and makes HR departments and, of course, CFOs very happy by making them more efficient is a Snap-on application. We have hundreds of these ISVs that are partnering with SAP to develop innovation onto the platform.
Bill, ERP systems, which have started as a ledger or an accounting software package, have really spread amazingly because, I believe, of the process mix and the process discipline that companies are getting to other areas of the enterprise, such as HR, CRM, and supply chain management, and now, very interestingly, corporate governance with Sarbox being such a large hurdle for companies. Do you think this integrated model is still viable, and what benefits do you think businesses should expect from ERP systems in the future?
The integrated model is the only way to go. The reason for that, when you look at any industry, and we focus on 29 distinctly different industries, whether you look at them for small, medium, or large-sized customers, the benefit of an integrated platform will generally take out up to 50% of your cost. And that's eliminating interfaces, ongoing recurring maintenance agreements with companies, the cost of supporting them, the people to support disparate platforms is a very expensive thing to do. So from a total cost of ownership, integration tailored to industry-specific needs is the only way to go. If you look at the idea of service-enabled platforms, which SAP has, you'll look at things like governance, risk, and compliance. When we viewed this market, we looked at a $28 billion market opportunity and both developed and acquired service-enabled applications to make the CFO much more satisfied by making them compliant with Sarbanes-Oxley and building innovation into the office of the CFO like never before. So I think an integrated platform that's service-enabled gives the client the best of all worlds. And incidentally, it actually feeds the innovation. Again, a lot of the time that we invest as a company is focused on independent software vendors that have small businesses but innovative technologies, and we welcome them openly to put that innovation onto the SAP platform so the customer is the ultimate winner. They build on the integration, and they constantly get new and exciting innovation. Furthermore, we think that a healthy ecosystem of service providers, too, is the way to go because many of these relationships, as you gentlemen know, are very local. And many of these companies want their local service provider right there at their doorstep, and we encourage that wholeheartedly.
As you know, the Cullinane and Green reports about how technology impacts business development. What technologies do you see changing the way we sell and market products? What's really going to change sales, do you see?
Certainly, the idea we spoke of earlier of having a customer-centric strategy is, of course, in some ways led by CRM. But to truly have a full view of that customer, you have to have an automated supply chain. You have to have tremendous relations with your suppliers because in many cases the manufacturer of goods and services is reliant on the supplier. You have to have a view into financials, and in most cases that has to be a multilingual, multi-currency view. You have to have your people managed effectively, and that role that the person plays in the company needs to be tapped into the way IT is deployed, because different players in a company from different functions will interact at different points in the life cycle of that customer relationship. And then on the customer relationship side, you really need a 360-degree view. You have to look at it from the sales, service, marketing, and of course, the teleweb enablement of that relationship. This value continuum, this content supply chain across the enterprise is the big idea. And then if I was to add one more element, customers will always raise the bar, and if they don't, you should, of course, raise the bar on yourself to constantly provide a higher level of service. Many of our customer relationships today will become successful because we'll welcome new suppliers of the ecosystem partners we have into the relationship to constantly keep it new, fresh, and innovative.
What about things like blogs, podcasts, social networks, some of the social computing technologies? Do you see any role for them moving forward in terms of enhancing the way we sell?
You know, I think that there's so many creative conversations we could have around that. The answer is yes, and as it relates to the whole Web 2.0 and the Internet and the various communities in which you communicate with and the extended ecosystem from the enterprise and the way you interoperate with that is truly fascinating in terms of the business models it will create in the future.
Yeah, of course, you know, we do a podcast, so we're very high on these technologies.
No, I mean, you know, look, to reach customers, to reach your community, to reach constituents, and do it in new and innovative ways, in digestible bite-sized chunks that they can actually take the content and the intellectual feedback and do something with it that's positive, is hugely important. I mean, I think about the way I learn and the way I work. It's constantly an integrated relationship with the Internet in one way, shape, or form, and I think that's what you all role model.
Thank you.
Bill, if I could turn to a sort of a personal question for a moment. Recently, a couple of weeks ago, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal in which you spoke of some of your early job experiences and you might even say the inordinate impact that they've had on your career. And I was just wondering what advice you might offer to young people about achieving success in business and how that's related to personal fulfillment and how you, if you would have done it differently or if you think that's the way young people should do it today.
Well, I tell you, it's a great question. The first thing I would absolutely say about being a young person is don't let anybody get in the way of your dreams.
Great.
Most of the people that I meet have limited dreams. And at some form or another, the world has taken away their ambition. The winners actually have a tremendous belief. They really believe it, that they can do anything. And they apply that personal will day in and day out around their dreams. The second aspect is not just believing it, but actually achieving it, seeing it through. And the power of persistence can simply not be overstated. You have to stay with it. You will fail, and you will learn more from your failures than your successes. And it's not how hard they knock you down that matters. It's how excited you were to pop back up again and keep moving forward.
Exactly.
And that's the one thing I've really learned. The winners are really persistent, and they don't get discouraged because that original dream was so strong, and it was built into their soul in such a real way that they won't let anybody take it away from them. That'd be my advice.
I think that's great advice. And I have another question, which is sort of something I've believed for a while, which is that your first few years in business, and I know in your case it was this deli that you really transformed, you see kind of all the issues that you see for the rest of your adult life, and it really sets the tone and your attitude towards business in those first 24 months or so. Do you still believe that?
I absolutely believe that. And the lesson above all other lessons that I've learned from that is in the end, your customers and your customer alone will determine whether or not you have a job.
That's
in the
true.
Delicatessen, it was no different than big business. We had to segment our market. We knew that we had to convince the high school student to walk an extra block to come to our store and bypass 7-Eleven. We knew we had to get the blue-collar worker into the store and treat that individual with a level of dignity and respect that exceeded that of our competition. We gave them credit. We knew that senior citizens typically didn't like to leave their house, so we delivered. And again, on the how do you get a high school student to walk a block past 7-Eleven,
right.
Well, you don't treat them like a high school student.
Exactly.
Right? You treat them like an adult. And instead of letting them in four at a time, you let them in 40 at a time because they wouldn't steal from you if you treated them right. We gave them a game room, gave them good food. So we really knew the customer, and we were absolutely passionate about providing a great service to that customer. Everything good that happened emanated from that single-minded vision, really, to serve every customer like they were the only customer.
Sounds like you've carried that throughout your career.
I have a tremendous humility when it comes to business, because in the end, it is all about making sure what you do adds value to that customer in a very unique and differentiated way. There will be competitors and people along the way that will present tremendous challenges. And having that loyalty with that customer, where whatever challenge comes your way because they prefer you more because you earned it, you'll weather the storm. And you'll be able to then find new customers based on continuous improvement of the way you serve your existing customers. So I feel very passionately about this, and there's nothing that I personally enjoy more than that interaction with the customer and delivering for that customer. And having that customer tell another customer, if this person says it, or if this company says it, you take it to the bank. Because in the end, the only currency any of us have is our word.
Right.
Those are words to live by, I think, for anyone in business, Bill. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Bill, shifting gears a little bit, SAP is truly a global organization and a very successful global company. What do you think it takes to be a success in global sales and marketing in this very competitive market?
First thing I think is culture. Companies aren't bound by individual markets or individual country identities or where their headquarters is located. Countries are simply bound by their own fantasy, their own imagination of how they can serve different markets in different countries and in different industries and in different market segments, and how they can use new and innovative ways to reach out to new constituents so they can win and they can grow and they can obviously give the shareholders their money and then some. So the first thing is developing that culture. The second thing is having a truly global solution. I'm quite fortunate at SAP because when we started the company 35 years ago, we focused on financials and the whole accounting process in different languages and different currencies, and out of that emanated a more complete total business solution and a platform. But it all started with a culture, and that culture was created early on in SAP. Other companies, they'll need technology to help them. I left a $300 million CPG company today, and they're limited by their supply chain in terms of actually taking their operations into Europe. And that's their ambition, to go global and to go from 300 million to a billion. So I think it's culture, it's enabling it through information technology, and then it's really investing in these local markets with the local culture, the local language, and the local execution machine required to get the job done.
Bill, I know that you've given many, many interviews over the years that you've been in business, and you've probably been asked some amazing questions, and I can imagine almost everything has been asked, but surely there must be one question that you haven't been asked that you would love the chance to answer. And I'd like to give you the chance to do that today, if you'd like to.
One of the interesting learnings I had early on, and I still have it today, is the whole notion of kind of doing what you're the best at. You know, nobody's ever really asked, you know, why do you do what you do the way you do it?
Right.
And what I've tried to do is always focus on what I do best and accentuate the positives of what I do best. There are some things that I choose not to do because I'm not the best at it. And what I'm quite passionate about is building teams around me that have the individual skills and that are best in the world at those individual skills, and blending that all into not only the way I manage my own personal business, but the way we create great teams and the way you create great companies. I think the big idea is, you know, what's the big question? The big question is, you know, how did you create a great company? And how are you going to create an even greater company? And how are you going to fulfill all your dreams? And it's going to happen at the hands of great people and great teams. And how you build them is you first recognize you don't know everything.
Right, right.
I totally agree with you.
That's a great answer.
And that'll be great for our listeners to hear that.
Thank you.
Bill, I wanted to thank you for joining us today. This has been even more inspirational than I'd hoped for, and I know our listeners will greatly appreciate it. So again, thanks so much. I know you're a busy man, and we really appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts with our listeners.
Thank you very much, Roger. I really appreciate it. Joe, I thank you, and I just enjoyed the content of the conversation very much and would be most happy anytime to join you guys in an interview. And
well, thank you so much, Bill. We really appreciate it. It was great.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it and look forward to next time.
Thanks for listening to the Cullinane and Green Report. We hope you'll join us again next time. In the meantime, remember, we're on the bleeding edge, so you don't have to be.